This program is a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and is brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.
97 Gold presents Your Money with Faye Bagby. Sound advice to help your money grow. Now, here's Faye Bagby on 97 Gold.
Good morning.
Good morning, Faye. How are you?
I'm wonderful. I love the nice, crisp days.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping it'll stay just crisp and nothing else.
Yeah. Those mornings are nice and cool. Sometimes I think we're looking at some 60s and maybe some, I think maybe 70 tomorrow or something like that. And then next week, a little bit cooler, like upper 50s, maybe near 60 again. It's kind of like that time of year and things fluctuate a little bit. And we get those nice, crisp fall days.
I'm ready for it, as long as it doesn't go into winter. Don't ever mention winter. Well, I don't want it to get down to 20 degrees again.
You just mentioned winter, so if it happens, it's now your fault.
It'll be my fault. Oh, my gosh. I didn't even mean to mention winter.
It's usually my fault.
That's right. It's usually you talk it, and then it happens.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I wanted to tell you, we had two maturities this week.
Really?
Yes, we did. It amazes me that Greenbaum, it was $1 million policy. It was a 10-month policy, and we did it in May.
Wow, that's fast.
That is fast. And we would have had two, and we never got the second one signed.
Really?
He went to the hospital, and the broker wouldn't ask him to sign the policy.
Why?
I don't know. Brokers are strange, strange people.
Yeah.
And then the other one that we just had come back was Steinberg. And Steinberg, we did it in two pieces. We did one policy in 18, and they just didn't know if they wanted to sell. And, of course, we knew they'd come back to us. And then they came back to us this year in October, 3 months ago.
Uh-huh.
We did the first one in October of last year, and then I believe the other one's been 5 months. April. Then they came back in April, and we did the other one. But Mr. Steinberg had two policies, and we did do both of them, and he just passed away.
Wow.
And it was supposed to have been a longer policy, but that it wasn't.
So that came in really early.
Yeah, it came in early. He had stage 4 lymph cancer and leukemia, and it already spread to a lot of places. When we bought it, the broker told us he'd been in and out of the hospital. Mm-hmm. And I believe it because he didn't last long.
Wow.
Yeah, we had a lot of people in both of them. And I got to thinking, all these policies that have come and matured lately, I noticed the same names. And what it is, they invest regularly. Every time a policy matures, they put their money back in. So that's why their names appear so much.
Hmm.
I was trying to figure out why their name is always on the list. We've got several people that just invest all the time. So they do make a lot of money.
And that's a good thing. You want to keep investing. You want to keep rolling over. You want to keep your profits and put them in new policies and keep all that churning, right?
Well, yes, and on one policy they made 19%. Let's see what they made on the other one. They made 18% because it was so short.
Wow.
We just did it in April this year.
Wow.
So, but if you could make, in 5 months, if you could make 9%, that's not bad.
Yeah, I would say that's amazing.
It is. It's an amazing thing sometimes.
Wow.
So anyway, everybody made good money. Both of them came in early, And I'm glad that right here at Christmas they got paid again.
Yeah, really, this is a good time of year to have something like that happen. When you looked at the policies and they said that he was in and out of the hospital, is that one of those things that really got your attention that said, hey, this is going to be a good policy, or were there other factors as well?
Well, that was a big one because I looked at it and he'd been in the hospital several times. And after we started the first one, he went to the hospital and we had to wait till he came back out. So I knew that what they were saying was really true, that he was serious, that it had spread, and every time they went in, he was not getting any better, I can tell you that.
Wow.
So, he developed lymph node cancer after the leukemia. Wow. So, you know, there just wasn't any way because it was very progressive, so it was moving pretty fast. So, but he was not. None of these people were very old. I'm thinking he was 60.
Really?
Yeah, he was 60 years old.
My goodness, that is young.
Yeah, most of these people lately have been very young. They have not been very old, and so it's amazing how this works.
So what are we looking at as we come, you know, we mentioned this time of year is a great year for maturities and policies to come in early. What are we looking at as we get into the final few weeks of the year? You know, should people be doing anything in particular, like year-end wrap-ups when it comes to investing or retirement planning or anything like that?
Well, yes. And a lot of people need to put money in their accounts before the end of the year. Maybe they haven't put all they should have put in this year. That's another thing you can do. People also need to take their RMDs before December 31st, and most of them know this, and they know to take it out of their account and pay it. There is a 50% penalty if you don't do that, so everybody needs to always do that. And don't be foolish and take all the money out of your account and spend it on something, then come to me and say, Faye, I don't have the money for my RMD. Yeah, I mean, it's an amazing thing. You got $60,000 and you spend it and play with it, and then say, oh my gosh, I forgot.
That's happened before, hasn't it?
It has happened before. I've had to cover them. So I know different things can happen, okay?
All right.
And, you know, everybody right now is thinking about end of the year, you know, what their finances look like, what their 401ks look like, whether they're going to retire next year, the next 2 or 3 years, or if they're going to retire at the first of the year. I have several people that are retiring in February. That's it. They're through.
Really?
Yep, they're through. They're going to take their money, make money, and that's it. They're tired, and I don't know why. They're young. These are 59-year-olds that are retiring. I'm not talking about somebody 75.
Oh, wow. Is there any advantage? Or why February?
Because it'll be the end of the year. They will have gotten their bonuses. They will have gotten their vacation pay for the year. And then all they have to add to their 401k will be their sick pay that they've not used.
Okay.
So you have all those different things to take into consideration. You don't want to retire and not get that bonus.
Is there a good or a bad time of year to plan to retire?
Well, it depends what your 401k looks like. You know, if you've been in it for years, any time of the year really won't make that much difference. And, of course, you know, a lot of people right now tell them to take all their money out of the stock market. Some of these gurus are saying that, and some are saying something else. You know, you never know. You know, stocks go up and down. So, you know, they have to think about all that. When they get ready to retire and get their money out of their account. And then a lot of people just say, I'm through. I want all my money out of the stock market. I want to put it in something that I know what I'm going to make. So that's when they come to us. When they get ready to retire, they don't want the ups and downs anymore. They don't have to put up with it anymore, so they don't want to.
Have you ever seen or even heard of anybody in the stock market and then they're, you know, inching up on retirement? They're, you know, maybe even a few weeks away, maybe that close to retirement, and all of a sudden something happens and everything bottoms out and they lose everything that close to retirement. Have you ever heard of anything like that?
Well, I've heard of some people that were close to retirement and had to stay longer because their portfolio had went down so bad they just couldn't do it right then. And they said, well, we've got to stay till it comes back up, you know, And that could take 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
And I was reading this week, this gentleman said everybody has forgot how bad 2008 really was. He said a lot of people did lose 50%. I was thinking it was like 40. But no, a lot of people did lose 50%.
Wow.
That's a lot of money.
It is.
When you're counting on every dime of that, you know, for your retirement.
Yeah, and especially that close to retirement. I mean, that could easily set somebody's retirement plans back by years. And, I'm sure that's the last thing people want to do, because not only do you inch up on retirement, you start getting excited about it, you know, walking away, doing your own thing, traveling, whatever you're going to do. But then the bottom falls out. You lose 50% if there was to happen again. And not only do you lose the money, there's the financial aspect, but then there's the emotional aspect that goes along with it. Because when you're that excited, the rug gets ripped out from under you. Man, it can be stifling as far as somebody's emotional well-being.
That's right. It can really do a number on you. So everybody, when they come to me, they're nervous, they're jerky, and they've been there a long time, and they don't trust the market. And they say, we've been there a long time. And as we go into retirement, we need to move that account over. We need to get it solid and just, do some investment in a life insurance policy where we know what we're going to make, but that they can't go down. That's the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
If they didn't get paid that second year, at least it's not going anywhere. They know where the money is. They know how it'll be paid out, and they're okay. It can't go down. That's the whole thing. Nobody wants to lose any money. I don't care who you are. You can be pretty wealthy, but nobody can afford that.
Yeah. Yeah. With these gurus who say, man, you need to take everything out of the stock market immediately, do you think that's a good idea, or is that too much of a knee-jerk reaction and too extreme?
It's pretty extreme. A lot of them are wanting to put it in gold. I can see the handwriting on the wall. They're saying, you must take it all out. The sky is falling. Put it in gold. But then you have an even bigger risk, that the gold can go up and down. It's a metal. There's not anything guaranteed about gold.
Yeah.
So, I would never have a lot of money in gold unless you're very, very wealthy and can afford the downturn of the gold.
That seems to be the theme. I keep hearing you say things like this. This is the underlying theme with a lot of these investments, whether it's, metals, gold, or if it's the stock market. The question is, it seems to be, only invest what you can afford to lose.
So always.
You don't seem to say that when it comes to a life settlement type of investment. It's like different verbiage. It's a totally different approach.
It is completely different because like gold goes down, silver goes down, bonds right now are down. I mean, a lot of things that you wouldn't think about are way down. Bonds are not paying hardly anything. And stocks are up, but the others are down. So what I'm saying is you need something that can't go down, something that when you get it, it's going to be what you put in plus your profit.
Mm-hmm.
With a life insurance policy, they always pay the face amount. A life insurance company is never going to tell you, you need to take a discount of 40% or 20%. They're going to pay exactly what they agreed to in their contract. That's what I like about life insurance. They always do what they say they're going to do, because it's in the contract. So, when you're investing, you have to think about that. Where am I at? If I'm 20 years old, 40 years old, you may say, I can afford all the risk. But most people that come to me are 50 years old, some of them 48, 45, and they say, I need to be making a little adjustment here. I want to get some of my money, a third or a half, over to safety where I know what I'm going to get.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to take the risk I was taking before.
Do you think that a lot of people are starting to have that thing in the back of their head, maybe moving from the back towards the front, that maybe something might be a little bit unstable in the stock market, and maybe this is a good time to kind of start looking at alternatives like this?
Well, as they get older, everybody thinks about that. As they get older, they think about, what they need to do, what risk they can accept. And also, they've got a family. You've got a wife that's going to retire with you, and she doesn't want to take any losses. She doesn't want to live on less than she's doing now. So they're all thinking about, what can I do You know, we had two people come to us the other day, and one of them, the CPA, said, "You've got too much cash." He said, "Don't leave it all in cash in the bank." And I don't know how much they had total, but I know that they were talking about $600,000 to $700,000 with us.
Huh.
So, you know, a CPA will tell them you don't want to keep that much money in the bank.
Do you know why?
Well, first of all, it's not earning anything. It's not making zilch, okay?
Uh-huh.
So he thinks you should take some of the risk out of it.
Okay.
If you don't have a lot of different accounts.
Okay. Because I know sometimes we say if you're not making money, you're losing money. So I guess that would be one of those situations.
Well, and, you know, about 2 to 3 weeks ago, you know, they propped up all the banks. You know, that was when they had that, the Federal Reserve came in and propped everything up. And I don't know what the problem was. Nobody hardly talked about it.
Yeah.
But I saw it on television a lot and on the internet, you know, where that, and I forget how many billion dollars they poured into the banks.
Really?
And I don't know, yeah, and I don't know what it was about. Nobody ever talked about it.
What does your gut say? Does that make you nervous?
I was a little nervous about it. And, of course, you know, you can go on Bank Watch and look up all the banks, which ones are in trouble and which ones are in good shape.
Huh. Bank Watch?
Yeah. Bank Watch.
All right. I know they did a, you know, they did the farmer bailout thing, and so they're you know, helping out the farmers. I guess I didn't hear about the bank propping up thing.
Yeah, I saw it 2 or 3 times, and I don't know. Apparently, this is money they need in the back, so to speak. You know, for reserves, they propped up their reserves, and it was a lot of money.
Hmm.
So I don't know what it was about. You know?
What happens if Federal Reserves go down? What's the downside of that? What could that mean for investors, for regular people?
Well, it could mean that some banks are not healthy.
Uh-oh.
That's what it could mean, that some of them are not where they ought to be, that they don't have the proper money in there, proper reserves. And banks don't carry a lot of reserves. It's not like an insurance company, because they have so many reserves, it's just amazing. By law, life insurance companies have to have reserves on every policy, and banks don't. Their banks are like 10 cents on the dollar.
Oh, my God.
And life insurance companies are not required. They're required to put up a lot of reserves because, remember, it's different than a bank. If somebody dies, they have to have money to pay that life insurance policy off right then.
Yeah.
That's why they have to carry so many billions and billions. And then we have life insurance companies that are rated B, B-rated companies, and they advertise they'll pay big rates. But when I go in and look at them, they're less than $1 billion in assets.
Wow.
And the companies we use are worth $57 billion.
Wow.
Yeah, we work with the big companies or not at all. That's something about us. That everybody has to be an A-rated company or we're not going to buy a policy. Because when we go in and look at these policies and we look at these insurance companies and I look at their ratings and they're B, 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 and then I go, well, why are they rated B? And it's because they've got like $900 million or $600 million. That's not anything for a life insurance. That's a very small company.
Yeah.
And so that's why when they're examined, they rate them. And they're not even rated A or A plus, and ours are all, you know, A plus to A two. So, it's because they have billions of dollars in reserves, billions of dollars in cash, and we don't have to worry about them. We know they can pay their claims.
Because, like you said, the bank is not required to have all that. I guess it kind of goes. I guess I'm having flashbacks of It's a Wonderful Life. You remember when George Bailey was there and there's a big run at the bank and he tells everybody, you know, the guy wants all his money. And he's like, well, it's not in the safe. It's tied up in so-and-so's house. And it's tied up in, you know, this and that and the other thing.
That's right. They loaned it out in mortgages.
Yeah, yeah. It's not like the money is sitting right there. But with a life insurance company, it has to actually be there because you may have to pay that out at any time. And you've got to have the actual funds on standby.
That's right. And all of them are examined every year. I don't know if everybody knows that. Life insurance companies are examined every year just like a bank. So they go in and they look and they say, okay, how many life insurance policies have you written? Okay, what are your reserves against those life insurance policies? What's your reserves against annuities? You know, you have to have a lot of reserves. And banks don't write life insurance policies, so they're not required to have that many reserves up like a life insurance company is. And, you know, they don't write other things. So a lot of those things, they're not required to have anything up against it.
Do you think that might be one of the greatest assets about the life settlement type of investment, is that the money is there, the reserves are there on standby at all times? Or is there maybe something else that's even better than that?
I don't think there's anything better than knowing they've got the reserves to pay you at any time. If it's $10 million, $20 million, or if it's $500,000, they have the money. So that's really important. It's important to always do business with an A-rated company where that you know that they're in good shape financially. You know that their rating hadn't slipped, hadn't went down to a B or B plus. I know people call me every once in a while. Would you represent our company? I said, what's your rating? Well, we're a B-rated company. I said, no, I wouldn't do that. No, we wouldn't do that. There wouldn't be any reason to, you know, because we want healthy companies. When we buy a policy, we check on it, and of course we have a long list of people. We know what their rating is. So when those companies present us with a policy, we know it's safe. We know it's all right. We know what their rating is.
So insurance companies are stable, so people can feel good about that. That is a win-win on every single level. Probably, like you say, the most important aspect of the life settlement. What about the policies themselves? Because I know that you only go after stage four cancer, and so I would think that that would be another level of stability that people can feel good about with this type of investment, right?
Well, I think it is, because if it's stage four, the chances of them surviving is almost nothing, because it has to metastasize. We want one that is not only, like, let's say it's breast cancer, but one that spreads the lymph nodes, that spread everywhere. And when we do, like, a tongue cancer or throat cancer, we look to see if this is spread. Of course, with throat cancer, it really doesn't matter. I mean, those are so serious that even without spreading, you're not going to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we see that it's in the ribs, and when we see that it's in all these other places, we know that they're not going to make it. Just like Mr. Steinberg, he had it. It was progressing, and of course, it was in the lymph nodes. He had leukemia, and then it had spread to the neck even. So you look to see where all it's spread, and it reasonably it's a good policy. And then you see the ones that say no progression.
Ooh.
And you run from them, because that one is not moving, and it's probably in remission, and they just don't want to tell us.
Yeah.
And they don't want to say it is.
That's a good thing, because, you know, ultimately in the end, we want, you know, people to go ahead and you know, be able to beat cancer and live a long life. From our humanity side, but from an investment point of view, that is not the type of investment that you're going after, which is why you're going after these stage four cancer patients. And when we say going after, I don't want it to sound like you're going in and commandeering anybody's life insurance policy. The reason you get them is because a person is diagnosed and they need some quick money. They need to sell it. And for that to happen, they need people like you to be there to buy them so that they can get a quick lump sum, right?
That's exactly right. So they're out looking for somebody to buy their policy because they need the money for treatment. Because like these that have just passed away, they were in and out of the hospital. I don't know what the medical bills were, but I know it probably ate up everything we paid them.
Yeah.
Because the man had been in the hospital in and out for the last year. So I know they needed the money to cover all the medical bills.
Yeah, and my goodness, you were saying isn't it like $100,000 a month sometimes to treat?
It runs about $100,000 a month. Some of the cancer medicine is $27,000 a month.
Wow.
Cancer is not a cheap deal.
No.
I mean, it's the most expensive thing I know.
Yeah. And so for that to happen, they've got to sell their policy. Usually that's the quickest thing. I mean, some people think about, well, you know, I can maybe mortgage my house or whatever, but it generally doesn't work that way. The fastest thing is the life insurance policy. And so you come in, you buy the policy, but you're not just buying any old policy. You're not buying the ones where we see on TV, the elderly people are in their RVs and the, you know, they're going to travel everywhere. They go see the grandkids and bouncing them up on the knees and smiling and happy. You're buying cancer policies of people diagnosed with stage for cancer. And so you're looking for specific types of cancer. You're looking for specific things. It doesn't mean that every policy comes across your desk you're going to even bid on. So what types of things are you looking for?
Well, pancreatic cancer, you know, is big with us. Everybody always wants in pancreatic cancer. And we're just now offering a pancreatic cancer right now. We've got two policies we're offering. One of them is a pancreatic cancer. And it'll probably be closed out Monday or Tuesday. Then we've got another policy. And the ones that are the best, I think, are ovarian cancer, breast cancer, neck, throat, and as I said, stomach cancer and colon cancer. Mm. Those are your big ones. Those are the ones you're not going to... I've never known anyone to survive stomach cancer or colon cancer. They may give you extra time, but they say it's the deadliest one. But I think that pancreatic cancer is the deadliest because we've done a lot of them, and so far, all of them, I think, have matured. I don't think we have any left. And every time we do one, you know, it seems to go real fast. And, of course, breast cancer. And I have one guy that says he doesn't like breast cancer, yet he's been in two or three, and they've all matured.
Really?
Yeah, he had one go over, so he thought they were fixing to all go over. Oh. And he got Larry, a breast cancer. And now that one has matured, and we've had two mature since he said that. And so I thought, you know, I should be sending him a copy of how many. We've done $8 million that have returned us to our clients in breast cancer. We've had 8 million of them that have come due.
That's a lot.
And people don't realize it.
Goodness gracious.
You know, they're just in one, maybe, and they don't realize all these others that we've done over the last 4 years.
Yeah, you people may be only in a small percentage, but you see the big picture. And, you know,
we've really done, yeah.
It's also fascinating to me that you're not only looking at what type of cancer it is, you're not just looking at the headline and saying, you know, breast cancer or pancreatic cancer or whatever the case may be. You're drilling down deep into the policies. You're digging deep into, you know, the treatments that people have had. You're really pulling this thing apart and examining it to its deepest core. So aside from just the type of cancer, what other things are you looking at?
Well, of course, I look on what if they're on methadone. I look at, you know, what kind of pain medication are they on. They on, you know, the strongest medicine you can get. If they're on that and they say their pain is rated at 9 or a 10, they're not going to make it. You can't make it if you're in that much pain every day. And we look to see how many cancer medications are on. Sometimes they're on three.
Wow. You know?
And sometimes they're on shots. Sometimes it's on the chemo. I mean, different ways. You're on pills, you're on the shots, whatever. Or you're on radiation. We did one policy, and they were on both. They did radiation and chemo. And I said, if they're trying to do both, they're really sick. That means they're not going to make it. So, you know, we're looking at all the things they're taking. If it's the second go-around, it's really bad.
Mm-hmm.
It's bad enough the first go-around. But breast cancer is one of those that will come back in 2 or 3 years, and then it spreads so much you can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
And then they always talk about every time they do a biopsy, it spreads. People don't even realize that. They have to do biopsies, but once they do, then, gosh, it spreads everywhere.
Really?
Once you cut into somebody, it's going to spread.
Huh.
So they have less chance once you do a biopsy.
Wow. And don't they say that when it comes back the second time, it comes back more aggressive than it did the first?
It does. It is very aggressive. And then it's going to go to all the lymph nodes. Once it gets to your lymph nodes, it's hard to stop because lymph nodes are all over our body.
Yeah.
We have lymph nodes everywhere. It will spread to all the lymph nodes through your bloodstream.
Hmm.
That's how people don't realize. That goes through your blood.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. I guess I didn't realize that.
Yeah, hadn't you thought about that? Yeah. Our lymph nodes are all connected to our blood.
Wow.
So well, that's how it spreads.
That really puts it in perspective. You know, you sit here and you think about it, and it's like, my goodness, once it starts traveling, you know, through that that system, like your blood system, man, that is so dangerous. We hear all the time, but you know, I guess I've just never put the two together. I've never connected them like that, and I think that's the missing bridge to really understand how severe some of these policies actually are.
That's exactly right. And ovarian cancer seems to be like it's very, very deadly. I don't know how they get it, but once they get it, they usually live about 18 months.
Wow.
And it's one of those you don't know you have. You know, there's two or three that are silent. You don't even know they're there until, pancreatic cancer. People don't even know they've got it. We had one person, we didn't even have them insured that we know about, that they lived 6 weeks because they didn't even know they had it.
Wow.
Yeah. Pancreatic cancer is a silent killer. You don't even know you've got it.
Yeah. And then once you find out, it's too late.
Yeah, it's usually too late. Now, if a person is examined regularly, they'll probably catch it when it's, you know, not near as far. But stomach cancer is the same way. You don't know it usually till it's spread. Mm. And some cancers you catch early. But pancreatic's usually not one of them. You know, we've done 3 or 4 big cancer policies with pancreatic cancer, and they live 9 to 12 months.
Oh, wow. That is so short.
Yeah. And then years ago, we had one that lived about 6 months. And customers tell me every day about relatives of theirs that had it, that, you know, it was very short-lived. They didn't live hardly any time. And one of our clients, you know, this summer he died a couple of months ago. And I never did ask him during that time what kind he had. But I know that he did not live hardly any time. He went to the hospital in Kerrville. He came back and he told us, I've got 30 days to live.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So altogether, he probably lived 6 months with it.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's just amazing to me how fast it is.
All right. Well, I know with this type of investment, there are 3 risks, and we'll get into those here in just a few minutes. But in the meantime, this is Your Money with Faye Bagby, and your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And that's the first time we've given out the phone number. And people are going to be mad. They say we don't give out the phone number enough, remember? remember that guy called me and said, I was trying to write it down, Faye, and you didn't give it out but one time. And he was in his pickup, and he stopped his pickup and got out.
And then we did. We did it again.
Yeah, and he's trying to jump back in the pickup and write down the phone number. It was funny.
All right, so give it out one more time just because.
Yeah, maybe we should. It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330.
That is your office number, by the way. So we should mention that if people pull out their cell phone right now and they dial that number, they can go ahead, leave a message over at the office, and you'll call them back. You'll make an appointment. You'll, you know, schedule time. And you talk to everybody who calls in. So if people think that, you know, hey, nobody's ever going to call me back, that is absolutely not true. You are on the ball with every single call you get.
I see every email. We always say, my secretary, Tina, or Claudia, whichever one does it, they take down the number, and I call them back. They'll send me a little email, and they'll say, this person has called and would like to talk to you. They want more information, and I always call them back, tell them everything, and then I'll make an appointment with them.
We get into trivia around this time, and you always bring interesting, fun things to the table. So what do you want to talk about today?
I want to talk about how we got here, how Christmas happened.
Cool.
I mean, most people don't even know. Well, the first part of it is the reason we have gifts is that baby Jesus was brought gifts. That's how far back gifts go.
Yeah.
Now, you probably didn't even know that.
I know there was frankincense, incense, and myrrh.
That's right. Okay, then evergreen branches. That was the first thing the Germans did. You know, I thought about this the other day. All the foreign countries have brought us everything. We aren't smart enough to thought all this out. The Germans are the first one to bring Christmas trees into their homes.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yes, and they decorated them with cookies and lights.
Cookies and lights?
Yes. They had candles on their dadgum trees, which was dangerous.
That is dangerous.
Then in the 1930s, the Christmas tree came to America. But it wasn't popular until 1846. And in Boston, they banished Christmas. They thought it was a heathen-type deal, and you couldn't even put up a Christmas tree. No Christmas at all.
Really?
In Boston. Oh, yeah. And then after Germany's Prince Albert, he brought it to England when he married Queen Victoria. And they were sketched in front of the Christmas tree. And, of course, that became popular immediately.
Huh.
And as I said, that's what started it. So then, after that started, everybody says, well, okay, Santa Claus. He came from St. Nicholas, a Christian bishop who was living in Turkey.
Really?
And we've talked about St. Nicholas before. And it was in the 4th century, and inherited a great deal of wealth, if you remember the story, because we did his story this summer. And he was giving it all away. He helped the needy. And then he became the protector of children. And when St. Nicholas died, his name became St. Nicholas in Dutch, and it became Sinterklaas. And then it eventually became Santa Claus.
Sinterklaas?
Sinterklaas.
Huh.
Again, in the foreign countries, in the Dutch. And then Santa Claus delivering presents comes from Holland.
Really?
And the feast day on December 6th, children would put their shoes out the night before, and in the morning they'd find little gifts from St. Nicholas.
Huh.
And then the stockings. There was a poor man. He had three children, and he couldn't afford to give them anything. And he didn't have a dowry to give to them. And so one night, St. Nicholas dropped a bag of gold down the man's chimney.
Ooh.
So that his oldest daughter would be able to get married. And the bag fell into a stocking. And that's how we got the stocking.
Wow.
And then the reason we leave milk and cookies for Santa is because the little Dutch kids would leave food and drink for St. Nicholas.
Huh.
And then we leave carrots for the reindeer. Because in Norse, this is mythology, people left hay and treats for their horses in hopes that God would stop by during the Yule hunting season. And Dutch children adopted this for St. Nicholas. But look at all this. It came from the Dutch and the Germans and everywhere. Then Santa Claus, how did he get his look? It was created in 1804 in New York, the Historical Society. And this guy's name was John Pintard. He would hand out wooden cutouts of Jolly St. Nick. And Santa Claus, and I did not know this, has worn blue and white and green in the past.
Now, I have seen those old-looking figurines where Santa's wearing that long robe, and it has the white, you know, fuzzies around the edges, but it was blue. I didn't realize that was where that came from.
Okay, and so where do you think the red suit came from?
I don't know.
1930, it was an ad by Coca-Cola.
Of course.
Of course, can you believe that? So then, Santa Claus flying in a manger and a sled going to the manger in 1819. And it was dreamt up by the same author who created the Headless Horseman, Washington Irving. He's the one that had him flying in a sleigh. And that was in 1819.
Really?
Now, Rudolph, who do you think did that?
At this point, I have no idea.
It was created by a department store, Montgomery Ward.
Of course it was. It was a financial thing. Sure.
It was a marketing gimmick to get people in. Now then, Rudolph almost didn't have the red nose.
Really?
At the time, a red nose was a sign of chronic alcoholism. Oh my gosh!
Reindeers are into the eggnog again.
That's right. So then they almost didn't name him that. They almost named Rudo and Reginald. But it just didn't sound right. So thank goodness they didn't do it. But it's amazing to me that Coca-Cola and Montgomery Ward was involved in all of this.
Wow. So you have all these wonderful traditions and things from these other countries to help shape some of it. And then the rest of it, just flat out marketing gimmicks.
That's right. Now then, eggnog was brought to America by Captain John Smith in Jamestown. In 1607.
Really?
Yes. Can you imagine that?
Eggnog is delicious.
I know. Now, moving on to the movies and the other things, and the song Silent Night is the most recorded Christmas song in history. It's been recorded 733 different versions.
Really?
And that's since 1978. Now then.
Wow.
Legend has it, Silent Night was written by Father Joseph Moore in Austria, determined to have music at his Christmas service.
Mm-hmm.
In reality, a priest wrote it while stationed at a pilgrim church in Austria.
Are you serious? It's not even that story?
Yes.
I've been fooled all these years. Oh, my goodness.
Well, I just had to tell you. I shouldn't have told you. It'd ruin your Christmas. Meanwhile, White Christmas is the best-selling song of all times.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow. I tell you, I honestly thought that the story about the guy that wanted the music at the Christmas Eve service. I've heard people narrate that story and put sound effects with it. It's so nice and warm and fuzzy, and that's not even true.
Okay, now do you want me to tell you this other? It's a little depressing. Santa Claus is Coming to Town was really written by songwriter James Haven. Gillespie. He was broke, jobless. His brother just died, and they said, would you write us a Christmas song? He was overcome with grief. He thought and thought about it, but eventually he was the one that found the inspiration to write Santa Claus is Coming to Town.
Really?
And here he was, grief-stricken, and he managed to do it.
Well, I'm thinking if I'm in those shoes, that's the last thing I'm going to write.
Most of us would have said, well, not right now, maybe a year or two from now, maybe 4 years from now.
Yeah.
You know, I just don't think I can handle that right now.
I can't handle it.
Now then, modern times, Mariah Carey, All I Want for Christmas Is You, is considered to be the most popular Christmas song now. That's a new deal.
Wow. I wouldn't have guessed that one.
And now then, the most popular new movie is The Grinch That Stole Christmas.
Oh, I do love The Grinch. Depends which one it is. If it's the original cartoon, I'm in. If it's others, I'm a little bit leery.
Well, I'm the same way. But I want to see Miracle on 34th every year. Don't want to avoid it. That is so good. And there's several. Oh, and then the one with Jimmy Stewart. Every year, like you were talking about a while ago, they owned the bank, and they thought he'd misappropriated the funds.
Yeah, It's a Wonderful Life.
It's a Wonderful Life, and it's one of my favorites also.
Yeah, with the Lionel...
what is his name?
Barrymore.
Uh-huh, Lionel Barrymore. Yeah. I forgot about that.
The other one...
But it's... Okay, what other one do you like?
I also like the Christmas Carol with George C. Scott.
Oh, yeah, as the mean guy.
Yes,
as,
Scrooge.
Yes. Well, and Tiny Tim, everybody has to see that.
Yes, yes. As a side note, did you know that George C. Scott, he's buried at, I think it's Hollywood Forever Cemetery, and you can get a map of, you know, to see who is on what plots. His headstone has no writing. It's just flat, and it's just, there's literally nothing on it. And so a lot of people were confused. And so I said, really? You don't know? And they're like,
No, maybe they took it off to have it redone or something. I said, no, it's after his Scrooge character where he says the ghost of Christmas future. He says, tell me I can wipe away the writing on this stone. And that's what he did.
Oh, my gosh. And he loved it, so he did it.
Yeah, he did it.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, man. Well, I knew they had to keep Marilyn Monroe's hidden, Frank Sinatra, because people would come in there and bother it.
Yeah.
So I knew that they had all those hidden where you couldn't see them.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. That is great. The George C. Scott had it done that way.
Yeah. At least that's those are the pieces that I put together. Nobody's actually officially said that, but that's what I what I believe. And so I'm sure you can probably Google it and find something out, but that's
my
conclusion.
It's true.
Yeah. That's another great Christmas movie. What about you? What's your favorite?
Well, I don't know. Well, I gave you those three that I like.
Yeah.
But new ones, I don't know. Because I'm really at Christmas, I'm into the old ones.
Yeah.
Oh, I know one of them is White Christmas, you know, where they go to Bing Crosby.
Yes.
Oh, that is a wonderful one with all the snow, and they go to Connecticut. That's a great movie.
Yeah. Do you like any of the cartoons and the animations, like Santa Claus is Coming to Town or Frosty the Snowman?
Oh, yes. Love Frosty the Snowman.
Yeah.
I've seen it so many times with my children, my grandchildren. And Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, you know. The movie is great.
Yes, yes.
All the animation is good. In fact, the older animation is even better.
Yeah, yeah, you're right about that. That is true.
Yeah, I don't like some of the fancy new animation.
Yeah, like the Polar Express, love the story, but the animation is really, it's really high-tech.
That's what I'm saying. It doesn't have all the homey part that we watch it for.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. It kind of loses that that sentimental, you know, down home, I don't know what to call it, the sentimental part, yeah.
Yeah, and I love my little reindeers to, you know, talk right and look right. You know what I mean? Don't make them too sophisticated.
Yeah.
And then Burl Ives. You've got to always include Burl Ives at Christmas.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my gosh, that guy can sing. He is the best.
Oh, isn't he, though? My goodness.
I love Burl Ives. I love all of his music. And he played in a lot of things that I really liked.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was in some great Christmas movies, as well as his other movies.
You know, I hope all these old classics don't get lost, you know, in coming generations. I hope they still see them and appreciate them for what they are.
Well, let me tell you something. The millenniums wouldn't even know what we're talking about. I'm serious. They don't even know about It's a Wonderful Life. They don't know about, you know, all these others. They would not know what White Christmas was.
Yeah.
You know? And they wouldn't remember that Gene Autry wrote Jingle Bells or anything like that.
Yeah.
You know? They don't even know who those people are.
No, no, no. Oh, no.
Can you imagine? They don't. And we could mention some of these people that wrote some of this stuff, they wouldn't even know who we're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, you hear some Christmas carols. I don't know if you're one of these people, but sometimes I'll hear a Christmas carol, and I'll only, regardless of who's singing it, I'll hear the original version that I remember hearing, like Blue Christmas. It's hard to hear anybody sing Blue Christmas without really actually hearing Elvis in the back of your brain. So.
That's exactly right. And they've made a lot of those, but that's who I want to hear on Blue Christmas.
Yeah, yeah.
And I want to hear Gene Autry on his song, and you know, Bing Crosby, whoever the original people were. I think the songs were better than the people who re-recorded and re-recorded.
Yeah, here comes Santa Claus, Gene Autry.
Yes, and you know, Andy Williams. Do you remember every year he had a Christmas show? Had all this talent on it.
Yes.
And I loved Andy Williams. He always had on that red sweater, remember?
Oh, yes.
I always had on the red sweater. And he'd have his little boys on the show with him.
Yep, yep.
And he was very family-orientated. And they would have all kinds of good music, good performers on there. And then Dean Martin would have a wonderful Christmas show. I loved their Christmas shows.
Yeah, I forgot about the Dean Martin one.
Oh, yeah. He had one of the most beautiful voices that existed.
Now, that's the truth right there.
It is. And you remember, what do you call those girls, the golden? What were they?
Uh, uh,
There were six of them, and he would line them up on either side.
I cannot.
What were they called? The Gold Diggers.
Yeah, yeah.
The Gold Diggers, yeah.
Wow,
I had to really think to remember that.
I know it. It's a long time ago.
I had to really pull that out.
Not like it's last week.
Yeah, I mean, it was a long time ago. But these are the shows we don't have now.
No, we don't.
Yeah, you know, the good musicals like this, they don't even know what a musical is.
No, huh?
No, and they don't have a show where you have all the guests come and they sing beautifully. You don't have that.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's amazing what our Christmas shows are now.
Yeah, variety shows are long gone, I think.
Yeah, I call it no talent. No talent.
Wow. Well, there you go. That about sums that up.
I bet took care of that, didn't I?
Oh, Christmas, such a wonderful time of the year. It's a time for tradition and remembering things and spending time with people and friends and loved ones. It really is wonderful. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330.
Now, we were talking about the investment. We were talking about the three risks because we've seen, you know, how you're dealing with insurance companies, which have, you know, and they're all A rated. And so we know the funds are there to pay the investment when it is due. We've also talked about the policies themselves, about how stable they are. We all know the numbers for stage four cancer and how deadly it can be. We know that it's going to pay off. But the investment does come with three major risks. What's the biggest?
That's right. There is risk to everything. We always want to tell people that. Nothing is without risk. So the risk is the policy could go over. It's not a risk of losing your money. It's a risk that you wouldn't get it as soon as you thought you would. The policy could go over. It could go a year or 2 years over. We don't know. But usually they're pretty close to what we say. A percentage of them are going to come in early. Percentage of them will come in on time. But you have to always know that they could go over and that you would have to pay the premiums if they go over. So that's the greatest risk of this whole investment, is your policy could go over and you'd have to pay some premium.
Okay.
And then the second risk is it's not liquid during the time it's invested. So when you invest your money, it is not liquid until the policy matures each time. When they mature, then you can get your money every time.
Okay.
So that's something everybody needs to know. And then if a life insurance company ever went broke, it would take you longer to get your money. But thank goodness we've never had a company in Texas not pay. We've never had one go broke. And anymore, these companies are so big, if one of them gets in trouble, somebody will buy it, as I always say, before nightfall.
Yeah.
Somebody would be standing in the wings to buy it.
So with the first risk, I'm sure people are thinking about, well, you know, gosh, we have to pay some premiums. That's fine, but they're probably wondering how much would that cut into their profit?
Well, usually it's not a lot. It could be $1,000 a year, it could be $2,000 a year, or it could be $15. You know, we have that one low one, and I don't know if that's the only small one we've got. But you know, I told you that I made the remark about $40-something premium, and this customer said, well, Faye, I've got one that's lower than that.
Really?
So I think her premium was $24 or something.
Oh, wow.
Every quarter. So it can happen that way. I was just thinking the policy that matured this week, the premium on that thing, I was going to tell you what it was. I'm looking here at it.
Mm-hmm.
It was just... like it would have been $1,900 or something like that.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, the whole thing. It was just a very, very small premium.
Yeah, that's not much at all.
No, it wouldn't have cost you hardly anything. So that is a good thing when the premium is like that. It was like $1,500 divided about among seven people.
Because there were
seven
people.
That would have been such a small amount, you wouldn't even have noticed it.
All right. And you say seven because there's seven people in the policy, right?
That's exactly right.
Okay. All right. So when people are looking at this and they're saying, okay, Faye, this is wonderful. I love the concept. How fast can I make, how much money? Or I guess I did that backwards. How much money can I make and how fast can I make it? That's got to be the first question that people ask.
Well, like these people, it came in early, so they made 9% in 5 months. Okay.
Wow.
Usually you're going to make 9% in 9 months. If it's a 12-month policy, you get paid 12%. It's 1% a month according to your contract. Lots of times, most of the policies pay between 22 and 24%. Sometimes they'll pay 30 if it's a 30-month contract. Sometimes a 30-month one may come in early, but it may come in on time, or it could be late. But we do have a lot of policies. We did an analysis the other day, and it was amazing how many policies had come in early. And, of course, you can go to our website. We don't ever give out the website.
That's right. We need to do that. It's AmericanFinancialMidland.com, and on there you've got all kinds of information. You have the money that people have made. You have actual names. Now, that's not their whole name. It may, like, say, you know.
No, it'll just give their initials where nobody will know who it is.
So that they know that they're real people, and these are real numbers. And so do people look at those, and do they say, you know, gosh.
Oh, yeah. In fact, a customer caught a mistake on there about 4 months ago.
Really?
The people that run our website for us, they were adding some policies on there, and they messed some numbers up, and there were some numbers that weren't even true. And we had to go in and fix all that.
Okay.
Yeah, and that was 3 or 4 months ago, and we had to have one of our computer experts go in and change it back like it should have been. I don't know how they messed it up, but somebody actually caught it and said that doesn't look right.
Wow.
And I said, well, that can't be. And I looked at it, and it was wrong. And so never say never.
But it's correct now.
It is correct now.
Okay.
We did go in and fix it immediately.
How long should people plan on doing this? Because I know we've been zoomed in to the, you know, to each individual policy and how a policy works. But as we zoom out and look at the big picture, how does this fit into retirement? How long should people do this? How does this work for a retirement strategy?
Well, I think it's a great retirement strategy because you can be adding to it all the time. You're adding every time it makes interest. You're adding to your portfolio. So the interest goes in your account, and then you say, okay, do it again, and we just keep rolling it over, especially when it's an IRA. You're not going to take any money out of it until you retire anyway. So money grows quicker when you're not paying taxes. Okay?
Oh, yeah.
So you can accumulate a lot more, and then hopefully you'll be in a smaller tax bracket when you decide you need some of it. So you'll be paying less taxes. You don't have to take any out till 70 and a half if you don't need it or if you don't want to. So that helps you a lot. So usually people are going to stay with us 7 to 10 years.
Oh, okay.
And they can stay longer. It depends what they need to do with their money.
When somebody's looking at this and they're saying, okay, well, Faye, I'm 40, I'm 50, and I've made some money. I haven't really done a whole lot of investments. I got a 401k here and there, so I got a little bit here and there, but I haven't really started actually technically, officially planning for retirement. Being 50 years old, is that too late? Is it a good...
It's just right. 50 okay. is a good age. You picked a good number because, you know, they're not too old unless they're 80, you know, you can't be getting money together for retirement if you're 80.
Yeah.
So you need to do this like when you're 40, 50, 60, 70, you know, long before. Because now I've got some people that are in their 80s, but their children are on their accounts with them. And that's the way it ought to be. You've got to have somebody on the account with you or we won't let you do it. Because we want two heads on there,
mm-hmm.
not just one person thinking we need two of them, okay?
All right, and that helps get the kids going as well, I would imagine, probably for their retirement.
It does. It helps them get started also.
Okay.
And we've got some people that are middle age and them and their mother is on there.
All right. Go ahead.
Well, and I've got this one couple that brought their mother over. So the mother and the daughter did a joint account. The husband did his by himself. And they've already had two maturities.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
And they haven't been there very long, about 6 months. They've had two.
I'm sure that's a welcome start to the program right there.
It is. I think they were really tickled that they had those.
All right. So for somebody who's interested, whether they want to get some information or they're ready to get started, wherever people fall in the spectrum, you've got room to see people this coming week.
That's right. We will be seeing people all week because a lot of people want to make some decisions before the end of the year. Mm-hmm. They want to move some money around, and now's the time to do it.
Okay. Perfect. So, Faye, one last time for people to call and make an appointment to get started, or at least just come get some information, what is your phone number?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330.
You've been listening to Your Money with Faye Bagby, sound advice to help your money grow. Listen for Your Money with Faye Bagby every Saturday morning at 10 here on 97 Gold.
This program has been a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and has been brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.